Hello, Dark Hearts. Cassie here. Just coming on before the episode because I forgot in the beginning, since we recorded ahead of schedule, that the day this episode airs will be the day after my little sister's birthday. So I just wanted to give her a shout out and wish her happy birthday because she is the best little sister who does so much for me. So if you know her, wish her a happy belated birthday. And this episode is for you since you asked if we were ever going to do any cults. So love you and have a great day. And thank you, Dark Hearts. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Heartland Dark Land. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Dark Hearts. Hey, Dark Hearts.
Oh, we got it at the same time.
Welcome back. Thank you guys for joining us yet again. I think I say that every time, but I'm always going to be grateful that people are listening to our podcast.
I know. And it's not just our moms anymore.
No, we actually have a few people.
Yeah, we have more than, I don't know. Actually, a lot more than I expect. When it's kind of mind-blowing when I look, and it's very, like, humbling, you know? That's really nice.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it so much.
Yeah, it's fun.
You want to talk about our
announcement? Just, you know, as usual, we're still running our little contest where we're giving away a tote bag with our logo and all the things on it. So in order to be entered into that, you just need to rate and review us and send us proof that you did. I mean, you know, an email, a Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And we'll enter you in because we're not going to do the drawing until like July 1st. So you have through the end of this month.
It'll probably be after July 1st that it actually gets drawn.
Yeah.
But you have until July 30th at midnight, 11:59 p.m. Once July 1st hits.
That's it.
That's it.
So yeah. And we need, like, we love the rating and reviewing, and it helps us a lot too with different things as far as like getting sponsors and that kind of thing. So it's something real easy and simple that you can do. And it really helps us out a lot.
Yeah. Because once we get to like a certain number of statistics and stuff, that's when it becomes a little easier that sponsors will actually want to see us. Cause I mean, I know some hosting sites have it where you can automatically have ads thrown in. The hosting site we have does not have that. Mm-hmm. They have a marketplace for it, but your stats have to be at a certain area. So those rating and reviewing really do help us a ton. So we just really appreciate it.
We just want our subscriptions to get paid for, basically. Like if we could get to the point where we're just covering the cost of what we pay each month, I would be so stoked.
So that would be amazing. I would love that. But we're going to dive in otherwise this week, you guys. My case is a little longer. I will do my best not to ramble on too much, but you know how we are. I can't make promises.
No promises.
And it is just a long case. But before I get started, first and foremost, I can't stress enough. I want to give a trigger warning. There's a lot to this case. There's verbal, mental, and physical abuse of both adult and children's, rape, sexual assault, bestiality, and torture. Mm-mm. Obviously, and there's murder as well. I'm not going to go into like super graphic details by any means, as usual, but it still is disturbing to hear. I just want to say that right off the bat, like even researching this, it's kind of like I mentioned last week. I remembered the case. I remembered there was some horribleness to it, but I forgot just how horrible could be. I even would have to take breaks researching this case just because I was getting sick to my stomach. So I want to give you guys that heads up right off the bat. So just listener discretion, okay?
Right. Let's all brace ourselves.
You know,
I feel like we're sitting around a little campfire now. I'm antsy to hear it.
So a couple weeks ago, actually, my little sister asked me if we were ever going to cover any cults. And what was funny is I was actually debating between this case and an older serial killer case when she asked me. So then I know I talked to you about what I should do. And I talked to another couple of people, my friend Lacey, and she was like, no, totally do the cult case. So we're going to be in Rulo, Nebraska. And that's a cult that was there in the mid 80s.
And can you say the name of the town? One more time.
Rulo. Rulo.
How do you spell that?
R-U-R-U-L-O.
Okay. Just so people know, because I've never heard of that town.
So it's not actually a town. It's a village.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's why then.
It's not big enough when I Googled it, and it's close to like the Kansas border. And so this is kind of a crossover, like parts of it takes place in Kansas, but the main story takes place in Rulo, Nebraska.
Okay.
I'm going to list my resources right off the bat because there were several. First was the podcast Cults from the Parcast Network. And I had actually listened to this episode a couple years ago with my really cool client who would listen to true crime podcasts with me during his massage sessions.
That's amazing.
So I did go back and listen to that. I think you can only listen to Cults on Spotify now. I think they're exclusive to Spotify, but it's still free. They don't have episode numbers. But the episode, if you want to listen, which I do highly recommend, it's a very detailed, it's actually a two-parter. So they go into Michael Ryan, the cult leader's background in the first episode, which I'm only going to touch on. I'm not going to go as in depth as they are. But the episodes are called Christian Identity. And I believe it also has his name in it, like Michael Wayne Ryan. Then okay. Small Town Murder also did an episode about it. It's episode 74. I've listened to every single one of their episodes, so I would have listened to this one. But again, it would have been a long time ago. I didn't re-listen to this one, but I do love the Small Town Murder guys. Yeah. They're what I listen to as I fall asleep at night.
Yeah, they're great.
They are. And they give details about the town. So they'll give you, if you want to know about Rulo, Nebraska, they're going to give you the history of it, which I always think is kind of fun.
Yeah, so it is, because there's always some random weird thing about it that you're like, oh, who would have thought?
Yeah. And so, like, if you haven't listened to them, they are comedians, and so they make jokes, but it's never usually at any of the victims' expenses, you know, things like that. There's a book, which I didn't get a chance to read, but I do really want to, because I'm sure it gives a lot of details. It's called Evil Harvest by Rod Colvin. And Cults even mentioned several times that they got a lot of their information from this book, so I think that would be really neat. I also read an article on Oxygen.com titled What is the Yahweh Cult? By Benjamin H. Smith. I also watched an episode of Deadly Cults, Season 1, Episode 3, titled Killers of Rulo, which is an Oxygen show. That one, if you want to watch it, is on the NBC app, which I thought it would have been on their Peacock app. It was not.
Oh.
Just the NBC app.
That's weird, but okay.
If you have a cable provider, you can watch it, or you can put in your email address to get like 3 free keys to unlock locked episodes. So that's what I did.
And you can use your friends' logins for your cable. Thank you to my friends that I use that for. I'm just kidding. I'm not promoting that, but.
So that, yeah, like I said, that's how I watched that one. That was actually the very last thing I watched, and I didn't get a ton of new info from that after reading and listening to the other stuff. They did interview a couple of the former members and like an FBI agent and stuff. So it was interesting to hear them talk. There was something that was brought up that I didn't hear in anything else that kind of confused me, but I'll get to that a little bit later. And then the final thing that I watched, which was actually the very first thing that I watched, but I saved it for last to mention because this is the one I told you I'm probably going to go on a slight rant about.
Yes.
It is from the show Evil Lives Here. And it was season 2, episode 4, titled Son of the Prophet. And that was on Discovery Plus.
Okay.
And like I said, at this point when I watched this, I vaguely remember details about this. So the whole episode is them interviewing Michael Ryan's oldest son, Dennis. Dennis was part of the cult. He participated in things. But so they talk to him about his childhood, which I'll kind of go into there too, and stuff like that. They gloss over all of the horrendous things the cult did and all the horrible things Dennis did while participating in it. And so at first he just comes off, which I'm not saying he is a victim, but they made it seem like he was an unwilling participant and he was brainwashed by this point and he willingly participated and had no remorse at the time. And so it just really angered me the way they portrayed. I'm not saying that they should have been like, oh, you're a villain, but they just really glossed over and they made it very super light. And it's like, if you were going to cover this case, I think they didn't do it justice. They don't really give much about the details. Like, they're just solely focusing really on him and poor him.
And yeah, when victims' families too would see that in a different way. So yeah,
And like I said, yes, he's a victim too. And I know that logically, and I know that, and we'll get into that bit more, but I just didn't like the way they did that show. So I don't recommend watching that one. I think it could have been done so much better. So that's mine. Don't recommend that one. But let's look really quickly at who Michael Ryan was. Lived in Kansas, where I don't remember because I didn't care enough about him to write it down. Right. So he's always blamed others for any of his problems. He was born in August of 1948. It sounds like maybe his mom was abusive towards him, but like it's only briefly hinted at and touched on. So I don't know if it was physical, verbal, what. In the cults episode, they mentioned that he had a younger brother who tragically died from choking on something. And for some reason, his mom blamed him. But that's literally all they said about it. No clue why she blamed him or anything like that. But if she blamed him, I can't imagine she treated him well.
Yeah, what an awful thing to put on a kid.
Yeah. Which is maybe where he gets the whole passing off responsibility thing. I don't know.
Stems deep there.
Yeah, he was a high school dropout, and of course it was all of his teacher's faults that he got poor grades and couldn't finish. He tried to join the army but was denied because like there was a he had a testicle that never descended or something.
Oh.
Yeah, well, he does end up
for him.
Yeah, he also ends up shooting off a couple of his like toes at one point.
God. Why?
With a stupid just hunting because? Accident. Yeah.
Oh, it was like an accident thing.
Accident. But later on, because we'll find out that he's a chronic liar, he will eventually tell like his members that he served in Vietnam, he was a Green Beret, part of the CIA, he knows mob members. At one point, he said he had some ridiculously high warrant out for him because of stuff he did in CIA. Of course, all this was a lie. He met his wife when he was a teenager. Their first date, which they talk about in cults, was them stealing gasoline from other cars, like siphoning gasoline.
How romantic.
Yep.
So, I mean, nowadays that could be a crime. I don't hate people. I mean, I get it now when you're
I mean, I think it was a crime even then. You're still stealing gas is always been a crime, I think.
But I get it more so now.
What's interesting is that like people talk about like how he was like despite his like all of this, he doesn't sound great. I don't get it, but everyone says he was a charmer. Like he could be very charismatic, which of course is a typical cult leader characteristic.
For sure.
So Michael and his wife Ruth, they get married young. They have three kids, Dennis being the oldest. They never mention their other children's names. They, like I said, they have three kids, another boy and a daughter, but their names are never really mentioned, which I can understand why, you know, they were minors and stuff and victims as well. There are multiple kids that are going to be mentioned throughout it, but like not mentioned, but there's multiple kids. I think at one point there ended up being 11 children on the compound, including Dennis. And we only ever hear one other child's name. So Michael has a bunch of odd jobs and then he becomes a truck driver, which I guess he really liked actually, but he got injured on the job and it messed up his spine pretty bad. So he had to have surgery, which fixed the spine, but now he can no longer sit for the long drives. So he's out of work. And I would feel like because it happened while he was like trying to like put a tarp on his trailer or something during a storm. So to me, that seems like it would be workman's comp, but maybe that wasn't a thing in the 80s. I don't really know.
I feel like it would be, but maybe there's more to that he didn't, you know, share.
Yeah. So then, you know, he ends up, he doesn't work. So they're like destitute and he gets addicted to his pain meds. One thing said he started abusing marijuana too. I don't know. The dude's doing other stuff, you know? And of course,
it takes a lot more than just marijuana to.
Yeah. He was abusive before the accident, but now like he's definitely very abusive. And Dennis mentioned that as a child, he was never angry at his dad for beatings. He was upset that he had disappointed him because he wanted to be just like him. So that's the mindset this child already has. So it's like, I can't even imagine. Like, I get how he got warped and stuff. It's kind of, he's a conflict. Dennis ends up being a conflict for me emotionally and mentally. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about all of this.
Yeah, that's like a cycle there. That's just starting it. Ugh.
Yeah. Eventually the family ends up on some farm in Kansas living rent free. But the problem is this farm doesn't have any running water. So.
Okay. Well, this is the '80s, right?
Yes. This is at this point around 82, 83.
Okay.
And, like I said, somewhere in Kansas, I'm assuming it's close to the Nebraska border because, Dennis, you know, Michael decides to try to find some spiritual guidance, and he starts attending Posse Comitatus meetings. And this is a different quote unquote religion, which follows the Christian identity religion, again, religion, okay, quote unquote, which is pretty much just a racist, anti-Semitic, anti-government movement. Mm. So pretty much Christian identity is still around, and a lot of those white supremacist, those things have a lot of those. We could have a whole episode on just the Posse Comitatus and the Christian identity. Again, the cults episode talks a little bit more about them, but the main thing is that they think white Christians are the only Christians. Everyone else is a seed of the devil, and they're at fault for pretty much everything wrong in the world. And they think Armageddon's coming, and after it's fought, like, people will either have the choice to get on boats and go quote unquote back where they came from.
Okay.
Or die. Those are their two options. Never mind that Jesus wasn't white, but whatever. You know. Also, let's talk about how they're anti-Semitic, but they eat kosher. A lot of them will eat kosher, which is part of the Jewish religion.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the Jewish religion, one of the oldest and most, like, revered names for God is Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think that they won't even say that word because it's so sacred. But so the Christian identity movement, they take that word and they say that's the true name of God. So they call God Yahweh, which I'm like, okay, you don't like these people, but you're taking things from them. How does that make any sense?
They can pick and choose. They're making up their own religion, I guess.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so at this point in the 80s, it was one of the worst farm crises since the Great Depression. Like, farmers, there was too much supply and not enough demand.
Mm.
So a lot of them are losing their farms, about to declare bankruptcy. So they're looking for people to blame. So why not join a religion that gives you someone to blame for that?
Perfect.
The man leading these rallies is James Wickstrom. There's just a lot of James in this story. I'm just going to tell you now. Yeah. Michael eventually becomes really close to him, and Wickstrom shows him favor. Like, he becomes one of his main men in Kansas, and Wickstrom bestows the honor upon Mike of, quote unquote, talking to Yahweh through the arm test. This is where Wickstrom had Michael hold his arm up. He then put one hand on his shoulder and another on his arm. He would then ask Yahweh questions. If the answer was yes, the arm stayed up. If it was no, the arm went down. This would be something that Michael used frequently eventually when he has his cult. But pretty much, like they talk about in the cults episode and stuff, how the way the people hold the arm and everything, it helps them to control what's being said and done. And at this point, the person's so engrossed, like, they don't realize they've given up control to the other person. So it's all just really a mind game there with that. So,
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And stupid also, thanks.
I mean, it'll be used a lot with Michael and his followers. So it was at these rallies that Michael met David Andreas and James Thim. And they were impressed by Michael. by his favor of Wickstrom, how confident he was, his knowledge of guns. Like, they had, like, these paramilitary camp type things, and he was so good at it. Like I said, everyone just said he was very charismatic. So then he also met Jimmy Haverkamp, who was also a gun enthusiast. And so these three started, you know, four with Michael, started to form their own little group within the Posse Comitatus. And Wickstrom encouraged this and told Michael it was good that they had each other, like that they should stick together, that they would need each other in the coming war. Eventually, so a weird man named... Yeah.
I just, like, picture them all wearing these white robes. Sorry, I did not mean to interrupt you, but that's like just I said, I'm thinking.
The Ku Klux Klan also follows the Christian identity, so, you know. At this point, there's a lot of, like, military aspects to it, too. And like I said, this is where Michael's now telling people he was served in Vietnam, he was a Green Beret, he was a CIA, which he was none of these things.
And then I didn't believe him. Can't Google that back then.
No, not then. So Rick Stice and his wife eventually come to a rally, and they go because they are out of options and they're looking for a faith healer. Rick owned a hog farm in Rulo, Nebraska, and he would grow some crops as well that would help support them. However, in this year, like I said, I believe this is like 83, 84 at this point. Uh-huh. Heavy rains washed away all of the insecticide from the crops, and they lost them all. So Rick dropped their health insurance to be able to pay the bank loan, and then they found out his wife had Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it was pretty far advanced. You know, it was only going to be medical treatments that could help her, but they couldn't afford those treatments without health insurance. So they came to a Posse Comitatus meeting looking for a faith healer. David Andreas introduced them to one, and so they were thankful for that. They got to know him. Unfortunately, and probably not surprisingly, the faith healing doesn't work, and Rick's wife passes away after a few months. Leaving him a widower with three young children and a failing farm. And this is kind of when he starts to become part of Michael Ryan's inner circle, because, you know, they're all there for him. They're comforting him.
Helping him because he has all these kids now.
Shortly after all of this, James Wickstrom actually tells Michael it's time for him to start his own flock. Like, he's impressed with him. He thinks he's doing great. And Michael is getting kind of tired. A lot of people are focusing more on the anti-government, the taxes, those types of things. And his focus is the religion, actually. Like, he's all about this Armageddon and stuff. He doesn't care about the taxes, the government. He's all about this upcoming war for the white Christians. And so at this point, he uses the arm test to tell his group that he's actually possessed by the Archangel Michael, who in the Bible is supposed to lead heaven's army during Armageddon. So at this point now, the group consists of Michael, his wife Ruth, their three kids, the oldest one being Dennis, Jimmy Haverkamp, David Andreas, James Thim, and Rick Stice and his three kids. So Michael's like, well, this isn't a big enough flock. So Jimmy gets his sister Cheryl to join. She's married to a man named Lester, and I can't remember their last name. Something with a G. I didn't write it down. And they have five kids. But Lester doesn't join the cult group, whatever you want to call it at this point. So she then brings in her and Jimmy's parents, Maxine and Norbert Haverkamp, who in turn bring along their other two children, which is Tim, who I think he was in his 20s. And I believe he had just gotten back from like college and stuff, and I think was living with his parents. And then their daughter, Lisa, who's only 15. And it's going to be important that you remember that she's only 15 later on. So at this point, 15, at this point, Michael takes a liking to Cheryl and decides she's going to become his wife.
Wait, the 15-year-old?
No. Cheryl is the, like, mother of five children who's already married to a guy named Lester. Lisa's the 15-year-old.
Okay, I was like, time out. That's even more disturbing. Yeah. But wouldn't surprise me in this situation, I guess.
Yep. So yeah, so he decides she's going to become his wife. Or I should say, Yahweh decided this. Which, can we also talk about how that's a classic cult leader thing to take multiple wives?
Yeah, always. It always, always. Is, yeah.
Yes.
Bizarre.
They're always, like, marrying certain people to each other and then taking multiple wives. It's, yeah. So.
So weird.
Yeah, so he tells her that Yahweh wants them to be wed, that Lester is a seed of Satan, and if she doesn't marry him, something bad would happen to her children. So Lester comes home one day to find his wife and children just gone. He's completely blindsided by this. Everyone is telling him that he needs to go to Michael's house with a bunch of men with guns and say that if they don't send out his kids, he's going to shoot up the place and all this stuff. But, like, Lester doesn't want to do that. That's not his style. He's not really confrontational. So eventually he works up the courage to go to Michael's house alone, which a lot of people are like, don't go alone. He will kill you. But he goes. But at this point, everyone's gone. They had moved to Rick Stice's farm in Rulo, Nebraska.
Did, I can't think of her name. Lisa? No. The wife.
Who Cheryl. Went
with, yes. Uh-huh. Did she go, like, willingly? Did it ever say, like, I mean, was she just like, oh, if that's what he wants, then I'll go, kind of?
So, I think it was kind of a little bit of, oh, if that was what is what he wants, I'll go. But then a little bit of fear for her children, too, because he's like, well, Yahweh said if you don't, something bad's going to happen to your children. Like, Michael used threats a lot. Mm-hmm. I did also read somewhere that Lester filed something with the courts that put out a warrant for Cheryl for taking the kids, but because no one knew where they were, nothing was really done about that. But what doesn't make sense to me is, like, it comes out later that Rulo, first of all, is a small town. Everyone knows everyone within this, so it's like people had ideas, and, like, later it's mentioned how there was a lot of calls to police about goings on at the Rulo farm because they heard gunshots at all hours of the day and night, and there was all these rumors about what was going on there. So, like, how did they not know? I don't,
like,
know.
Were they even just scared? I feel like if there's a lot of people too in, like, a cult situation, like, can law enforcement, I mean, it makes you wonder if they were even a little threatened by, you know, if you do one thing, are they all going to come after you? And,
you know, it never really says. In the final show that I watched, the FBI agent talks about how they were trying to find reasons to be able to get on the farm because, like, they needed legal reasons. They couldn't just go.
Yeah. Some kind of probable and so cause.
It, yeah. And so, and then a lot of the stuff, like, they couldn't find anyone who had actually witnessed anything themselves. They were all rumors, or a friend of a friend had seen this or heard this. So they never found, like, a witness, like, I saw this happen.
Yeah.
And so they had a hard time, at least the FBI. I don't know if the police did anything or not. It looked like there was some sort of news interview with Rick at some point. Like, they showed little clips of this. I don't know if it was a news interview or something. They never fully say, but there's, like, clips showing him talking to someone with a microphone and about, like, what they're doing. And they're like, we're just doing our thing, and we respect people to do their things. Like, no, you don't, because you think that you guys are going to rule the world and you're going to murder. Anyways.
Right.
So,
no, that's not how that works, my friend.
Yeah. So, now we have Rick, his three kids, Michael, his wife Ruth, their three kids, Cheryl and her five kids, James Tim, and David Andreas and Jimmy Haverkamp, all living at the farm.
A lot of people.
Yeah. So at first, Maxine and Norbert don't join them on the compound, but they come and visit frequently. Tim Haverkamp, I'm not sure if he stayed with his parents at first or lived there as well. So Michael then says that Rick needs to stop raising hogs because they aren't kosher. So, like I said, again, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-mm.
He also tells Rick that he has to marry Lisa, who is only 15.
Okay, yep.
And Rick is like 34, 35 at this point.
So and he's old not enough married, that he could be or he's married.
He's the one whose wife just died of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Okay, so trying to keep them all straight here.
I know, but there's so many names in this one. I know. So, like, his wife had only died a few months ago. You know, he's still grieving, but he believes in Yahweh and Michael. So he's like, all right, I guess, you know. The thing is, though, is he said they can sleep in the same bed, but they couldn't consummate their marriage. Yahweh didn't want that. So I don't know if this is just a weird control thing, if he was kind of like realized like, hey, she's only 15, a 34-year-old having sex with a 16-year-old isn't okay.
Yeah, we can probably get in trouble for this.
Or if it was some weird mix of both. I don't really know. Seems weird to me. Why did he feel like Rick needed to be married to Lisa anyways? But again, I feel like that's another cult leader thing where they like decide couples too.
Yeah.
So now this is where Michael starts using the arm test for like all sorts of little things, like who's doing what chores. And like Cheryl used it to determine if she could start a school for the children, which she could. I mean, I guess at least the kids had school.
I mean, there's the silver lining there.
Yeah, but he becomes more controlling. He even uses it to determine if people have transgressed against Yahweh, if which child has been bad that day. And then he, of course, would go punish them. Fasting was used as a punishment a lot. Fasting and ritual. So people would have to go days without food. So again, that's kind of another torture mind control thing, is you have these people in these weakened states, lack of sleep. I think one of them was someone wasn't allowed to sleep for 3 days.
Oh, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then he even decides, okay, the women and the men need to be separate. So the women and the children live in the house. And there's a couple trailers on the property as well. So the men kind of turn one of them into this like army bunker type thing. And that's where they live. And
interesting.
Yep. And he told all of his, you know, his followers that because they were the chosen white Christians, everything belonged to Yahweh, thus belonging to them. And so as long as they didn't take from other white chosen Christians, it was fine. It wasn't stealing because it was Yahweh's, and it was just taking from the devil. So they couldn't get in trouble for it. So they would take livestock, farm equipment, canned goods, and of course guns and ammo from all of these different farms around the Nebraska-Kansas area. Like, this is how they supported themselves. Yes.
So shitty.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're preparing for that upcoming war. Which I guess Michael called War of the Wheatfields because he thought it was going to be fought in Kansas.
The Wheatfield, that sounds so...
Yeah.
Hick.
Yeah. So then at one point, while Norbert was on a supply run or something for Michael, which it sounds like maybe he was gone for several days, Michael tells Maxine, who, mind you, would be his mother-in-law because he's quote-unquote married to Cheryl, even right. though they're not legally married or anything. You know, he married them, just like he married Lisa and Rick.
Oh, yeah.
But he tells Maxine that Yahweh wanted her to marry him. Said that Norbert had transgressed. He accused him of hiding money or something like that from him. And pretty much said that if she didn't marry him, something bad would happen to Norbert. He then tells her that Yahweh wanted them to take a trip together. And they end up in Omaha, where he checks them into a motel and says Yahweh told them that they're going to stay there now for several days. So he spends days, like, verbally and mentally abusing her and breaking her down and telling her about all these horrible, horrific things that are going to happen to her and to Norbert and their family if she doesn't do exactly what he says. So on the third day, she finally agrees. He then proceeds to rape her, and they drive back to Rulo. And Norbert gets back, I guess, shortly after they do, and Michael holds a gun to his chest.
Jeez.
And tells him he needs to get his act together. He needs to start listening. And Norbert has no idea what's going on. Like, half the time, people have no idea what their supposed transgressions were.
Yeah, when you're making it up as you go, kind of difficult to have a set guidelines there.
Yep. Michael actually shoots his gun at Norbert's feet. Like, you would see in cartoon, you know, like, when people are shooting at their feet and they're dancing around and stuff. And Norbert had had a heart attack, like, several months prior.
Oh.
So Michael's like, I'm going to give you another heart attack, and you're not going to come back from this one. And, yeah.
Jeez.
Lots of threats. Mm-hmm. Maxine didn't tell Norbert about the rape. which I don't know if he knows about his wife now being married to Michael. I would assume so, but it never really says.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think by this point, people are just afraid of Michael. Right. They're mentally broken.
They just have to accept it because they're like, whatever, he's...
Yeah.
It's his way anyway.
Mm-hmm. So at some point now, and I think this was before the whole marrying Maxine thing, Michael assigns ranks to everyone. The men are privates. I don't remember if the women and children actually had ranks. Rick is actually his high priest. Michael is, of course, king. And so this makes his wives queens and his son Dennis a prince.
Oh, gosh. It sounds like a little kid playing a game.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Like, clearly this that's is
the
like...
mindset, too. I mean, it's not like he's really in the right state of mind anyway, so.
No. So Michael had said that in the upcoming war, he would actually fall and it would be Dennis who would carry it on in his place and become king. So by this point, like, Dennis is thoroughly under Michael's spell. Like, he's wanted to be just like his father. He always looked up to his father, even through the beatings as a small child. And then with all of this, like, he's now at this point, he's around 15, and his dad is like giving him guns. He's like, you're a soldier now, you're gonna have to kill anyone who's not, you know, one of the chosen Christians. Mm-hmm. And you can't feel guilty or bad about it. He's like, you save your tears for after the war is done. And Dennis eventually, like, he buys into it. He's starts emulating his father. He starts dressing like him, acting like him. And he's around 15 at this point. And, like, they talk about, and Michael does talk about in the Deadly Cults and stuff too. Not Michael, Dennis talks about in the Deadly Cults, like, how he did. He would then do what he thought his dad would do.
And that's his, like, example more. And role model of, I mean, because was he going to school, or none of these kids were in school? They were just being schooled there, right?
It's like a typical cult. They're all kept isolated from the outside world, any other families who would be the voice of reason.
Right.
You know, they have very minimal contact with the outside world. They pretty much stay on the farm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just making sure I'm tracking here. So much yes, going ma'am. On.
I know. So Michael then calls a meeting where he tells them that anyone who questions him, thus questioning Yahweh, would be punished. Because, see, at this point, people were starting to question him, and he could tell he was starting to lose some people. Like, if he didn't do something, he'd probably lose followers. So James Tim asked a question about this, and I can't remember what it was, but it was something really small, and it wasn't really questioning Michael himself. It was like asking a clarifying question.
Yeah.
But it made Michael mad, and so he told him that, you know, now Tim is going to be a slave because he questioned him. In this meeting, he also says that now Lisa is going to become his wife. So he apparently just wanted the whole female side of the Heverkamp family. And Rick, trying to prevent this, tells him that Lisa's pregnant with his child, which, ew, you're old enough to be her dad.
And they're not supposed to be sleeping together, correct?
Exactly. So Michael is pissed. Like, he goes into a rage, saying, you disobeyed Yahweh, you disobeyed me, like, all this. So Rick now goes from the high priest to also being a slave. So they are kept ostracized from the rest of the quote-unquote family. They're in their own separate trailer. They're beaten frequently. They're used to do menial, horrible tasks.
So,
Go ahead.
I don't want to interrupt. I just was going to ask, was Lisa, and maybe you're going to say, is Lisa, was she indeed pregnant, or was that...
She was. There's not a bunch of information, but so, and that's the other thing. Like, they don't talk about when she gave birth, but I think she gave birth before the cult was ended, maybe. Okay. The way one thing was worded that I was reading, it sounded like she would have given birth, but, like, there's no mention of, like, a doctor or anything like that. So, well, yeah, no.
Wondering if he was, like, Lisa. Lying to not have her.
See, and
go,
I heard, no.
But. Okay, no, well, Lisa, that's all disturbing nonetheless.
It's all, yeah, it's all very disturbing. I have, listen, Rick is another one I have issues with, like him and Dennis, like,
oh yeah.
They both do some things that I'm just like, I don't, and I've never been in their position. This is where this case is really hard for me too, because logically I know there's all this manipulation and abuse and breaking that goes into cults and getting your followers, mm-hmm. and there's the groupthink and all of that. But then there's the emotional side of me that's like, how could you participate in this? How could you do this? And I'm like, okay, but you're scared. Dennis, on the one hand, I'm like, you were a kid. You were like, this is how you're raised. That's a little different.
Rick, you don't know any different.
Yeah. Rick, there are some things that I'm like, as a father, you done fucked up.
Yeah. And you've lived in the real world to know that.
Yeah. And we'll get more into that and you'll understand why I have these feelings about Rick. So they're now slaves and they're kept out in this other separate trailer away from everybody. They're not allowed to eat with everybody. They're used for all the tasks that no one wants to do. And it's not good. And like I said before, Michael would use this arm test to determine which children had been bad. And eventually it was always just Luke Stice, who was 5 years old. He was Rick's youngest son. Because Rick was a 5-year old who couldn't control his emotions, which you got to think this poor child lost his mother. You know, yeah. All of these huge changes traumatic. Have been made. Yeah. So he then becomes the brunt of these beatings. He, like, at one point, so he's then sent out to the trailer with Rick and James Thim. And at one point, Michael comes out, makes him strip naked and go out in the cold snow. I think it's like February, makes him roll around like a dog. And then he takes a whip and, like, ties it around his neck and is choking him and lifting him by it until I think Ruth eventually gets him to stop it or something. The things that he did, like, he would call him a mongrel, he would make him act like a dog, he would treat him like a dog, he'd make him eat food off the floor, you know, that type of stuff. But he would also flick cigarette ashes into his open mouth. And I mean, and he would beat
that
him.
That is awful.
Yes. One of the other things he would do, which it wasn't like a baptism, but it kind of sounded like it, but it was something about him trying to accept Yahweh. So he would take him often to the bathroom and, like, essentially almost drown him in the tub.
What the hell?
And he would take pictures of Rick witnessing these things, so he was incriminating him, you know, saying
how awful too for Rick to watch this happen. How do you just stand there and let this happen to your kid?
See, right.
Yeah.
Like, this is where I'm like, okay,
at this point, like, I know you're scared of him, but you still would fight or do something. Like,
I would, and I can hope. I don't
know. Well, one, like, would think.
Because, like, Ruth will eventually even say that she, you know, she called herself. She's like, I was a coward. She's like, I feel so much guilt for the fact that I let my son Dennis become the man he became, you know, act the way he did and stuff.
Absolutely. You should. Yeah. But
it's just, like I said, it's so difficult. Like, when you're so beat down and abused. And you have to remember, too, Ruth was with Michael when she was a teenager. So that started early, too, for her.
So she's
Rick was his own man for a long time. You know, that's where, with Rick, I'm slightly less sympathetic. And I try not to
be a man.
It's like, you were in grief and stuff like that. Like, your wife passed, but, like, she expected you to take care of your children.
Right.
So,
like, take your kids and run away. Go.
Well... Okay,
I mean,
so now listen.
Here we go.
So you're going to get angry. So Rick realizes he has to do something, and he does gain the courage to run away. But for some reason, he decides to leave his children.
I was just going to guess that.
Yep. Go to Omaha, and instead of going to the police or anything, he decides the best way to help them is to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I actually have less respect for him even than I have before.
Well, it gets worse. So he spends a week or more trying to find a job, but failing to do so, he returns to the farm.
That's going to be great.
Well, we'll come back to what happens there, but this is the part where that final Deadly Cult show confused me, because in this, when they're interviewing the retired FBI agent who was in charge of the case, he mentioned going to the farm and trying to talk to Rick, but Michael wouldn't let him because, you know, Rick owned the farm.
Uh-huh.
Then he said a week or so later, he actually got a call from Rick who told him he was scared for his life, but he wouldn't give any details over the phone. So the agent asks if they can meet up, and Rick hesitates, saying he's afraid, but he'll think about it. Then he hangs up. So in the show, they don't actually say when this took place, but then when they go on later, it sounds like this must have been when he ran away and was in Omaha.
Okay.
So, like I said, I'm trying to give Rick the benefit of the doubt. I've never been in this situation, but this is where I have anger, because if he escaped and he was talking to FBI at this point, he could have prevented so many horrific things.
Yeah.
Because there's some horrible things that are about to start happening.
Start to happen, yeah. I'm like, eh, we're past that point.
Oh no, it gets worse. It gets way worse before the end. So Rick goes back to the farm, and to punish him, Michael tells a couple of the men to go grab a goat. And then he tells Rick that, yep.
No, I know where this is going.
Uh-huh.
But go ahead. Sorry, I need to shut up and keep going.
So he then tells Rick that Yahweh wants him to have sex with the goat as punishment. So it's either that or be killed. So Rick has sex with the goat. And at some point, and I think it's later on, and just another form of torture and punishment for both Rick and James, but Michael forces James them to sexually assault Rick.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I just don't even have any words for that.
No. It's horrible.
Absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm. So one night, while Michael's at the trailer of the slaves, berating James them for something, Luke was standing in a doorway trying to keep from, you know, becoming the new focus of Michael's ire. So as Michael's storming out of the trailer, he pushes Luke out of the way, but he pushed him so hard that he flew back and hit a metal bookshelf, hitting his head really hard, and like his eyes instantly rolled in the back of his head and he fell to the floor. Michael didn't even stop. They had to call him back. And he says later, he's quoted as saying, "Shit, I wasn't even mad at him." Wow. Yeah. So Luke does die because of the injuries.
From that? Okay.
Uh-huh. That's what I was... Which you gotta think, he's probably a malnourished little boy who's already abused. And right. Rick was a pretty big guy, like a hefty guy.
Honestly, that was probably like the best thing that could happen for him, is to be put out, like be gone out of that, you know?
Yeah.
It's awful. But
this is where I'm like, okay, Rick was gone. He could have taken Luke with him. He could have talked to the FBI agent. They could have been there and everything. So this was like in February or March of 1985, and it was still cold. So the ground's still a bit frozen, but Michael forces Rick and James them to dig a shallow grave for the child. And there's another quote from Michael where he said, "Look, it's the dead burying the dead." Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So after this, Rick was
going with that.
Yeah. So after this, Rick realized he needed to try and escape again. Him and James were chained to the front porch of this shed and stuff a lot, or the trailer a lot. But he tried to talk to James and tell him that he needed to try to escape too. But James truly believed that he could still make things right with Yahweh. Like, he was very much engrossed in this, a believer in this. And everyone says he was a very shy, quiet young man. He started out in the Mennonite faith and then came into this with David Andreas, who David Andreas was like his best friend. They had known each other since they were small children.
Gosh.
But one day, Rick and James are sent to town to rent a VCR, which I don't understand why he sent the two men who are slaves that he doesn't trust.
Right, and Rick's already ran away once. Like, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So while James was talking to the store clerk, Rick took this chance to run away again.
Of course.
And
right.
Michael wasn't worried about it because he figured he'd come back. So James then, of course, continues to be beaten and abused. And like I said before, Dennis, who's now 16 at this time, believed so much in his father that he'd be mean to the others as well. It's mentioned how once when his dad was gone and left him in charge, Dennis and James were shooting at sparrows and got into some sort of petty argument. Dennis took his gun and shot him through the cheek.
Holy shit. Sorry, but that's...
Yeah. And while another person was cleaning the wounds, Dennis then put cayenne pepper in the wounds. Yeah. So like I said, that first show I watched made him seem like he was just following his dad's orders, but he would initiate and come up with his own torments. Like, I think David even mentioned in Deadly Cults how Dennis made him and James run all night long around the farm or something like that, too.
Ugh.
So then in April 1985, it's about to get real bad.
I thought we already were at that point. I can't imagine it getting even worse than that.
No, it's about to get really bad. Ruth cooked a turkey and Michael thought that it looked dry. Then he thought it smelled like ammonia. So since it was stored in the freezer near James Tim's trailer, he decided James must have poisoned it. He went to the trailer and he found a cleaner with ammonia in it. And so then he made James come to the main house and eat the turkey. Who, mind you, James has no idea what's going on at this point, right?
Right.
So then he does the arm test to determine if it's poisoned. And of course, the arm test says it is.
Gosh.
So he had David and Jimmy take him to one of the old hog pens, which actually had dozens of deceased piglets in it still.
Oh, my gosh.
Because, remember, they stopped raising the hogs. And apparently they just, I guess, let them go and starve.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So he was then chained up. I don't remember if they beat him right away that night or not, but the next day, they beat him for the entirety of the next day, only taking breaks to eat meals.
How was he even alive?
Michael, Dennis, who, like I said, is 16, Jimmy, and Tim Haverkamp, and David Andreas, who, again, has known James since they were kids and they were best friends, they all beat and sodomized James with a shovel handle.
Oh my gosh.
Later, an autopsy would show that there was, like, just horrific internal injuries from this.
Mm-mm.
The next day, barely able to move or speak, James is still continually asking for Yahweh's forgiveness. Dennis actually recounts in the Deadly Cult show that right up until the end, James still had faith in Yahweh and was asking to be forgiven. And, like, in the show, David is crying at this point. You know, he talks about how he'll always feel guilty for his part in this.
He was even alive. I mean,
I think this is like the third day of his confinement. Michael shoots off the tip of one of James's fingers and then has the other men all shoot off another. And like, I'm not sure, like, I know Tim was here taking part in this, but I don't know if he shot off a finger too or not. Like, he was a big part of it too. I don't know. But Michael then stomps on his arm, breaking it in half. And
nauseous just over this. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible that humans
He has Jimmy, I think it was Jimmy or it was Tim and Dennis each break one of his legs. Which Dennis does mention that in the first show, Evil Lives Here. You know, he's like, I just did what my dad told me. Then they break for lunch. Because, you know, doing horrific things to a person will work up an appetite, I guess.
Yeah.
So Michael tells the men that Yahweh wants James dead by 6 p.m. So David uses a tractor to dig a grave for him. When they go back, they beat him more.
He's still alive? I was hoping he, like, died.
Yeah.
I mean, for his own sake. Sorry, that sounds terrible. Yeah. I didn't, you know.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I also kind of forgot to mention, and part of the torture they had done after they shot off his fingers, Michael sent Dennis for a razor and pliers, and they skinned parts of his leg. So this man went through some horrific torture.
And this is all because he thought he poisoned the chicken or turkey. I mean, yes. Among other things, but the thing that spawned this specific. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So now in the show Deadly Cults, they interviewed David too, and he said he was crying so hard that Michael sent him out. But this is the only time this is mentioned. So I don't know if he was actually there when James is actually killed or not. But Michael stomps on his head and then his chest to kill him. Which you have to remember, James at this point is so weak and malnourished that I'm sure breaking his bones. Yeah. And again, I mean, he was a scrawny guy to begin with. Like, he wasn't very big to begin with. And Michael was.
And then all that. Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't just bleed out. I mean, from all the
things. I can't believe he survived so long. So after the murder of James Sim, Michael sends his members on, like, theft sprees. Like, he's like, oh, I should ease up on the abuse now, but let's go steal more shit. And it's actually on one of these theft missions that Jimmy Haverkamp and David Andreas were actually arrested. They had stolen a crop sprayer from a farm, and so they were actually originally pulled over for not properly displaying taillights on the proper crop sprayer. Say that 5 times fast.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was like 1 a.m. So anyone who's grown up in a rural area knows that country roads can get super dark. So yeah,
so creepy. Yeah.
But once they discovered who these men were, they were arrested. They realized it was stolen property, and Michael told them through, like, some sort of other person or something that they had to take responsibility, take the punishment, because they messed up. So not surprisingly, being away from Michael and his influence, it wasn't long before they talked. You know, David's feeling super guilty about the things he did to his friend. And yeah, so now back to the whole Deadly Cults thing and the FBI agent and the whole confusion of what Rick is doing.
Yes.
So the agent said a couple weeks later, he got another call from Rick saying he would meet with him and telling him that his son Luke was dead. But yet another thing had said that, like, when the farm was raided the first time, they thought Luke had run away and no one on the farm said otherwise until Rick told authorities about his death. So, like, I don't get, you know, the timeline fully there. But however, when the agent was on his way to Omaha to meet with Rick, he got a call that two of the members of the cult had been arrested and were willing to talk. So David told them about James Tim's murder. And this is when they were able to arrest Michael and raid the farm.
Finally.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my dog's all hyped up.
You're good. They found a weapons cache of 150,000 rounds of ammo, a ton of guns, canned goods, and $250,000 of stolen property, which I did Google at this time. It would be the equivalent of $671,721.65 today. So over $500,000 in stolen farm goods and equipment and cattle and stuff like that. It was during a second raid of the property that the bodies of Luke Stice and James Tim were found. So Michael and Dennis Ryan and Tim Haverkamp were all charged with first degree murder. Tim would eventually plead guilty to a lesser charge of second degree murder. Jimmy Haverkamp and David Andreas were charged with second degree murder and possession of stolen property. So Jimmy and David were found guilty and sentenced to 26 years in prison. They each just served half of that for good behavior.
Wow. Tim Haverkamp. Sick.
Tim Haverkamp pleaded guilty to second degree murder, and he testified against both Michael and Dennis in their trials. He was given 10 years to life. He was released in 2009 after serving 23 years. He was Tim Haverkamp.
Oh, okay.
Haverkamps.
I'm just trying to keep them all. Yeah.
I know. There's a lot. So then, in 2014, he was granted commutation of that parole, which is rare. So he had requested it be commuted so he could eventually move out of Nebraska. And I actually got that information from a website called Argus Leader while I was typing up my notes, because I realized of all the stuff I listened to or watched, nothing really gave information about what happened to Tim at the end of it all. And I thought that was weird, especially because he clearly got a pretty higher charge than David and his brother Jim.
For sure, yeah.
Rick Stice did get charged with transporting stolen cattle or something like that. So he served 6 months in jail and then 5 years probation. That's all he got charged with? Yeah, an article by
AP News. I mean, AP I get that News. He didn't actually do anything, but he did still a lot, present. Actually.
He was
and
present.
He actually didn't turn any of them in when he could have prevented a lot of that.
And he molested, sexually assaulted a 15-year-old child. So
that's him. Yes. Okay. No, you're right. I forgot about that part of that. That was him. Gosh, there's so many sick things in this story. I can't keep track.
Yeah. So an article by AP News mentioned that in 1992, his daughter had asked to live with him again. So it sounds like his children became wards of the state. She was 16 and her remaining brother was 13 and they had lived with an aunt and uncle. So she would still remain a ward of the state, but be able to live with him on a trial basis. But like the brother was still living with the aunt and uncle. I don't know if that was by choice, but like she wanted to live with him, which I'm like, I don't know how you forgive a parent for that.
No.
But
No.
So Dennis was actually charged with second degree murder and he was tried as an adult at the age of 16 and he was sentenced to life in prison. When he was asked why he participated, he simply stated that it was what Yahweh wanted. And he admitted in the deadly cults that at the time he felt no guilt after the torture and murder of James Tim and just went about his life and forgot about him. He did mention in Eva Lives Here how a black man actually approached him and told him how he had been taught wrong and went through the Bible with him, which Dennis said he didn't understand why the man cared so much to try and help a racist teenager. But he eventually, like, it took him a while, but he was eventually able to see that his dad had taught him wrong. And when he wrote his dad asking him why, Michael simply told him he was a seed of the devil now, and if he ever saw him again, he would kill him. So then...
Wow. He's a good guy.
And Dennis says he 100% believes it. He had no doubt in his mind that his father would kill him if he ever saw him again.
Oh, I'm sure, based off everything else he did with no remorse, so...
And Ruth mentioned in Deadly Cult, because, like, she's interviewed, too, how when they were arrested, she asked Michael if he would look after their son and protect him, and he wouldn't. And actually, Michael tried to put the blame on everyone, even his son. He tried to say he wasn't responsible for any of it.
Sounds right. He did that when he was young, too, right?
Uh-huh. So eventually, after almost 12 years in prison, Dennis got his conviction overturned and was instead charged with manslaughter. And since the sentence for that charge was served, he was released.
How did it get overturned?
His lawyer in appeals.
I'm just surprised that...
Probably because of his age. And they probably determined, you know, the mental, emotional abuse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It actually talks about how he's married and has a son of his own now. Like, he talks about that, and he talks about how, you know, he seems genuinely remorseful, and this is where, like I said, I'm torn with him on how I feel about him being, because I'm like, he was a kid, this is how he was raised, but he did such horrific, horrible things, and I know the prison system is meant to reform, but, like, these were horrendous, horrific things.
Right, and, like... Yeah, was that enough time for him to be reformed? You know, I mean,
at this point, it sounds like it was.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Where does he live now? Is he, like, still in Nebraska?
I have no idea.
That's kind of scary. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Michael Ryan was found guilty of first-degree murder, and he was sentenced to death.
Good.
He never once showed any remorse for his actions. He did eventually die of cancer in May of 2015 in the Tecumseh State Prison, just here in Nebraska. Good.
I'm glad that's where he was, because that's an ugly place.
Yes. So then Ruth was never charged with anything, but like I said, she talked about how guilty she felt for allowing her son Dennis to go down that path. Cheryl actually had to go through professional deprogramming, which is already like a controversial thing in and of itself about like deprogramming people from cults, but it doesn't really say much after that. This broke my heart. It said Lisa just wanted to finish high school, and she did have a baby too. So yeah, she was actually pregnant.
Jeez.
Don't know about the baby. Maxine and Norbert.
Like at that point, couldn't they? Yeah, you think they could charge Rick with statutory rape or something? But
I mean, I guess I don't know what the age was though in '80s.
I know. And how could they? I mean, they could prove that, but like at this point, they're just trying to get. I mean, he's on for a higher. I mean, different sentence, I guess. So whatever. Yeah.
So Maxine and Norbert, I think, just try to move on with their lives. It sounded like they did end up back in Kansas because Tim's reason for wanting to be released from probation was because of his ailing parents. Like, if he wanted to leave the state, he'd have to file paperwork. And if something were to happen to him, it doesn't go quick enough.
I wondered what his reason was for that.
Okay. Yeah. So that's Rulo Nebraska's cult.
That's insane.
It's a lot.
So when did it all end? Like,
in 1985.
'85.
So it was about 2 years, I think, of them all living on the farm together. It was like 83 or 84 when they all lived on the farm together.
Okay.
Timeline of this stuff is a little hazy and sketchy. Like I said, I do highly recommend the cults episode, and I'll put all the stuff I listed at the beginning in the show notes. So if anyone was like, oh, what was it? I wanted to go back and look it. They'll all be there. The cults episode does go way more in depth. They talk about like the psychological aspects of things of what it could be. I said,
that's interesting.
I want to read Evil Harvest, but then again, I don't because I'm sure it goes into some graphic details. And just reading some of the stuff and like the articles, like it was sickening. So
yeah, even this little bit that you touched on was pretty sickening, and I can only imagine it goes into further detail. But I do want to watch the documentaries. And I think it's always super interesting when they talk to either victims that are still, you know, that survived or whoever, you know, the person who's in jail, whatever the perpetrator.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see them. And sometimes it's just like, it makes this case make more sense when you see them. For me, it does. Yeah. Like, oh,
yeah.
So face with the name.
Yeah. And like I said, Dennis and Rick are the two where I'm just like, really like, Dennis, I'm torn on because he was a kid. I'm like, did he, you know, he seems genuine in the shows where he's interviewed and stuff. Rick, I'm just like, dude, you failed so hard. And if you did talk to the FBI when you first got out, like you could have prevented your son and James.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, for sure. And like the thing with Dennis too, it's like, okay, well, his dad was obviously very charismatic where people clunked up. So it's kind of like, well, Dennis could also be that way too. I could see, I mean, you want to think that he genuinely changed, but like, I could see,
I mean, in the show, he doesn't seem very charismatic. He doesn't really seem very charismatic. Like,
yeah. Still don't like him. Yeah.
No, it's just, it's a difficult case. And it's one of those like ambiguous things where I'm like, logically, I understand all these things, but emotionally, it's so hard for me to separate the actions of these people, even knowing that they were victims too. And it's just, it's so difficult. And it's such a hard case. And there was such horrible things that happened. And
yeah, so, it's hard to even look past that to, like, I don't know how anyone could forgive them for something like that. You know, I mean, I'm sure they have to. I just think I'm so angry for all these people.
I'm so curious to know where all these children are. You know, I'm curious, but I'm sure like those poor kids, I can't even imagine. I hope they had therapy.
Yeah, I would hope so too. Cause that's super traumatic.
I hope Lester was reunited with his 5 children. I don't even know how old the kids were and stuff like that.
Jeez.
Like I said, they only mentioned Dennis and Luke. And so the others, I think, were between their ages. Like Luke or Dennis must have been the oldest. Luke was maybe the youngest until the baby was born. Mm-hmm. But
jeez, that's a crazy one. I did not even realize there was a Nebraska cult. I feel like maybe I heard a little bit in the past, but not anything to this extreme. So
it was probably after I listened to that episode with my client. I was like, oh my God, did you know about there was a cult in Nebraska?
It probably was. I watched, once again, I feel like this is all I talk about and maybe this show should just like pay me, but American Horror Story. There was a season called Cult and I had a really hard time. That's probably one of the seasons I had the hardest time watching just because the stuff they did was so horrific and just hard to watch, but it was so interesting to see how they would just like cling to their leader, you know, and do anything.
And that's why I do highly recommend the cults episode too. Mm-hmm. Because they go into that psychological mindset side of the followers and how they could do these things, you know, and they have quotes from psychologists and psychiatrists and stuff. And I think maybe the book Evil Harvest might have even gone into that a bit more and stuff too. So that's where I'm like, there's the part of me that I'm like, maybe I could wrap my head around it a little better. Like I'm already trying to, but like I said, I don't know if I could read that book either. Cause I'm like, I want to, but I don't.
It's so hard. Anything with like torture and then kids, animals, like,
I'm out. But
that's terrible. But thanks for doing all the research on that and reading up on that, because I for sure would have had a real hard time doing that one.
It was tough. It was definitely tough. That's where, like I said, I was researching it that night when we recorded your episode that came out before this one, which it's funny because we went from being like, hey, we're recording the day an episode is supposed to come out.
I know.
To now we're recording this a week before this episode's supposed to come out. I think we need time crunches, I think is what you and I need to not procrastinate. Yeah. Because we're going to at least until August, we're going to try to be ahead of the game because we've both got so much going on that we're like, okay.
Yeah, I'm like, I am not putting my vacation on hold. Like, no, we're not having that stuff for anything. So I'm like, if I have to record all night long, every episode, I will. Because we need a freaking break here, okay? Not from this, but just from other things in life. So,
you know, we spent a half hour before we recorded this, you know, mapping out who's doing what states for the next few weeks. But you guys, seriously, still, please, please, please send us any suggestions, especially for other states outside of Nebraska.
Seriously.
True, like, crime, ghost stories, paranormal, aliens. Please, someone send me alien messages. Alien messages. I need to know about them.
You guys can have that conversation on your own time. Thanks. No, I'm kidding.
One of these days, I'm going to find a good story to cover, an alien story.
Okay. Well, I'll be waiting.
I need your help,
really.
Though.
Yeah, give us a case. We'll give you a shout out for giving us a case. Yes. Which,
and I know several of you have sent us cases. A lot of them are Nebraska cases that we've been given.
Which are great.
Yes. So we appreciate it. We are going to get to them. We just need you to give us time because Nebraska, we have so many we want to do. So like we have a stockpile of Nebraska cases. That's where we need help with some more of the other ones. If you guys have other.
We're trying to find ones that aren't so like known. I mean, that's okay too.
Yeah.
But we would like ones that maybe aren't as known just to kind of get them out there. And I know we have listeners like all over because you can see on our stats. So it's like people that are in those other states, you got to know something. You got to share something with us.
And listen, the people, some of our Canadian friends who listen and New Zealand and other countries, feel free to send us messages of fun stories that you guys have or interesting stuff from your area. Like maybe we can do some sort of like bonus episodes or something with those types of things eventually, but we still want to hear from you guys too. Honestly, I'm very surprised when our stats show us we have people from other countries listening to us.
I know. It's pretty cool. It's fun. I wish I could just meet all of you and thank you all for listening to us. But even if your story's not a Heartland story, still tell us because we love true crime, regardless of where it's at. So we still want to hear
ghost stories and paranormal and cryptids. And okay, so maybe I'm the one who likes the cryptids and the aliens, but listen,
I want all of your little bit. I'm okay with that, you know, but the aliens, I just have a hard time with. But you know, you find me a story, Cassie, that I can, I'm not saying I'm not open to it. So
the universe is so big. There's no way we can be the only living things.
We're not going down this road. Yeah, but where's all the proof? You can't even find a story to convince me.
I can find stories. I just can't find Heartland stories. There's a great Alaska one.
I know. Is that the one from the movie The Fourth Kind or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that one was very scary, actually. That was like, that's not what I was visioning alien
which
stuff.
So, shout out to Leslie from the Grim Mystics. Again, you guys check out their podcast if you're all caught up on ours. But her and I are very much the same in that regards, and you and her co-host are the same in the regards of the aliens. Funny. So I told her, I was like, can you please at some point just cover this case, since I cannot, because
that's so funny.
I want this case covered so badly.
I know. You know,
I'm gonna have one day,
I don't know, out of bounds case.
You know,
maybe
like
there's
I said,
a month where
maybe
we can just pick any state.
Yes.
A theme of that or something.
Yeah. Maybe like every 50 episodes.
Yeah, that's fair. We're almost to 50.
We are. Listen, I figured that out. What did I say? February 15th will be our of 2023 will be our 50th episode.
Which is close to our 1 year. Well, yes, obviously, I guess when you think about, because we've done one every week. So, okay.
Yeah. Oh, snap. I didn't even think about that. Look at you. And
Duh. After we said that, like, okay, well, we probably could have done the math. But you know what? Numbers are hard. I'm not a math person. I just don't care about math.
Math isn't my forte. But listen, I've got youngins running around. So this is kind of perfect timing because it's about bedtime for them. So again, you guys, Heartland period. I can't words tonight. Heartland period Darkland podcast at gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I will put all of that in the show notes. But email us your letting us know you rated and reviewed us. That goes till the end of the month. Just tell us all the things. We want to hear all the stories.
And if you know things about this case we just talked about, any case that we talk about, if you know something
or
different
you even
or have a theory,
discuss
just
it.
Tell us.
Or you even just want to discuss it with us. You want to share your thoughts and opinions. Please do.
I love
we that. We want to hear from you. We love when we get messages and comments and things like that. Like, we love interacting with you guys.
For sure.
So until next time. Stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.